UAB Medcast is an ongoing medical education podcast. The UAB Division of Continuing Education designates that each episode of this enduring material is worth a maximum of 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit. To collect credit, please visit uabmedicine.org/medcast and complete the episode's post-test.
Welcome to UAB Medcast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals. Bringing knowledge to your world. Here's Melanie Cole.
The Portico transcatheter aortic valve can offer outstanding control and accuracy for optimal patient outcomes. My guest today is Dr. Mark Sass. He's an associate professor in interventional cardiology at UAB Medicine. Welcome to the show, Dr. Sass. So what are the valves you're most commonly replacing these days?
Yeah, the from a interventional cardiology point of view, right now the only valves that have a percutaneous option are aortic valves, and that's the transcatheter aortic valve replacement. We have done a few TAVR valves where we've put them in mitral, previously replaced mitral valves, but that's off-label and only used in dire emergencies. Unfortunately, the technology to replace the tricuspid valve and the mitral valve are not ready for percutaneous prime time, per se. The pediatric people actually do replace the pulmonic valve in a relatively commonly, but those are within the realm of congenital heart disease. But one of the new valve, the Sapien 3 valve, the Edwards, was just approved for replacing a pulmonic valve once there is a conduit or a graft that was put in mainly by a surgeon. So now that valve, the pulmonic position, can be replaced. But currently, the only valve for mainly adults that can be replaced percutaneously is the aortic valve.
So typically, what have been your options for replacing the aortic valve?
Yeah, the currently the two FDA-approved devices that are on the market is the Medtronic Core Valve and now Evolute Valve, and the Edwards Sapien line. They've gone through three evolutions, and now we're using the currently the Sapien 3 valve to replace aortic valves. That's the one we use mainly at UAB just because we have a great experience with the valve, and it seems to work for our patient population where we currently use the lowest amount of contrast probably in the country and lowest amount of fluoro time because between our team being a multidisciplinary team and our excellent support from our echocardiographer and our CT radiologist, we can kind of line up the valve externally before we even put it in and have an idea so we can use the least amount of x-ray contrast and least amount of fluoro because we kind of know how we're going to put it in before we even get there.
So then tell us about the Portico TAVR valve and some of the trials that you're involved in.
Yeah, the one thing that is good, because we've done the most volume in Alabama, we're closing in on our 500th TAVR. Our program was started in August of 2012, and we're probably definitely the busiest center in Alabama and probably one of the busiest centers in the entire Southeast. And once you've created a reputation, companies are much more willing to give you new technologies to do in trials, and I think it offers our patient population a much greater option. The one that we are currently trialing is the Portico valve. This is a self-expanding TAVR valve that is currently in use in Europe, but still not FDA approved in the United States. So this is our trial that we're going to be doing. It will be in a high-risk population. That means an STS score of 8% or greater. 8% means like there is a 8% risk of dying during a open surgical procedure. So anyone with a high-risk features has the ability to be randomized to this valve versus a FDA-approved device, which either would be the Medtronic Evolute or the Sapien 3 device. So it gives us another option of, we don't know how it's going to perform, but it for patients, I think it works nicely because I've used the device. It goes in quite nicely. The other thing is that the patients automatically get long-term follow-up. Some patients are not happy with having to travel, but in most studies, patients who are followed within clinical trials actually do better because they're constantly followed up by physicians and other allied health professionals to make sure that they're doing well. So they never, ever get lost to follow-up unless they actually just don't want to come back, and that happens. But I think the benefit is that they get a valve that will replace the aortic valve, which is a deadly condition, and they get randomized at a center that's very, very experienced in doing transcatheter aortic valve replacement. And three, they get followed in the long term. And some patients, when they kind of go back to their normal lives after they've been fixed, they say, well, I feel so good. They don't want to be followed anymore, and all of these conditions that we see, whether it's aortic valve disease, mitral disease, or even coronary disease, needs regular follow-up by a cardiologist.
So this valve has a unique delivery system that you mentioned. So it's for greater accuracy and placement, yes?
Yes. The good thing about this is fully retrievable up to 80% deployed. So if you don't like the position, you can retrieve it, and it's quite actually quite easy to retrieve it, and then you retrieve it and you pull it back into the sheath, and then you reposition it, and then you redeploy it again, which is quite nice. Currently, the balloon expandable Edwards model does not have that ability, and the Medtronic is not as fully retrievable as this device. The Medtronic is retrievable, but I found that it sometimes that this valve, again, I have not a lot of experience, definitely more experience with the Edwards and the Medtronic version, but all of them are excellent devices, have great data. But with this one, for your patients who may be a teeny bit sicker, who have lower ejection fractions and or have more calcium that we want to maybe place the valve a little bit differently, we have that ability with this. Again, it's a randomized trial, so they're not necessarily going to get that. But anyone who gets involved, any patient who enrolls in the trial has a 50% chance of getting this valve. So, and hopefully, if enough patients are enrolled, that this valve will be definitely on the market. And again, we're not trying to promote one valve over the other. The beauty of the beauty of our institution is because we've done a lot, we get offered these valves, we get the valves offered first in their current form, in their most updated form. We can decide and tailor which valve is better for each patient. Like patients who have less calcium in their outflow tract and have kidney failure, we'll probably use the Sapien 3, which is an excellent valve, excellent track record. If patients have more calcium and we have a risk of annulus rupture, or their ejection fraction is a little lower and we don't want to pace them, then we have the ability to put in the Medtronic valve. And then hopefully if this goes well and we enroll a lot of patients, then this will be a third option for patients in the United States. And the United States is a little bit more restrictive on how these get approved. In Europe, I think they have at least three, and if not more, valves to choose from.
Do you imagine it's going to have low rates of post-procedure pacemaker implantation complications or paravalvular leaks?
I think the paravalvular leaks, I think, will be, I think the skirt on it is definitely good, and the implant depth for this will be, I think, easier to kind of manage. But all of these valves, the self-expanders do have a little bit more evidence of pacemaker because they're self-expanding means they're made of nitinol, so they continue to expand. forever trying, the metal tries to go back to its original form. So sometimes that just continues to try to squeeze, and again, the heart pushes back, but sometimes the conduction system is in there. But I think from this point of view, that it's, since it's easier to retrieve and easier to deploy, I think that one of the benefits is that that we may be able to avoid those pacemaker complications and avoid paravalvular leak, because we can kind of check that before we fully deploy it. So I think in that respect, we can kind of, again, tailor the depth of the valve. And in most self-expanders, like the Evolute and Core valve prior to that, the deeper you implant the valve, the higher the pacemaker risk, because that's where you're impinging on the left ventricular outflow tract, and that's where the conduction system lives. So with the shallower the implant depth, then you actually have less pacemaker complications. And then also from a paravalvular leak point of view, if you don't like where it's placed and you can see the paravalvular leak on echo, you can always, again, retrieve and put it in. And again, maybe you have to put deeper, so you may balance a little bit of paravalvular leak versus pacemaker implantation. And there's trade-offs for each of those complications, but I think the beauty of the retrievable nature of the valve makes it that we can potentially get the valve in its most optimal position without having spending way too long in the patient trying to adjust it, because it is relatively easy.
So unless your patients need them for another medical condition, do you imagine that you'll be using anticoagulant medications temporarily post-surgery?
Well, with this, all the valves currently that are percutaneously placed do not require anticoagulation per se. Anticoagulation is something like warfarin, Coumadin, the novel oral anticoagulants like dabigatran, apixaban, and rivaroxaban, the Xarelto and Eliquis and Pradaxa. Those are typically called anticoagulants. There's currently a new trial that I don't know if we'll be participating in, but we've heard about it, where they're going to try to use anticoagulants, but the current practice is everyone takes aspirin indefinitely and takes either Plavix or one of its cousins, and we haven't studied that, like ticagrelor or Prasugrel, but usually it's aspirin and Plavix for a total of 6 months and then aspirin indefinitely. So just like any bioprosthetic valve that the surgeons actually put in open, it's still only aspirin is the antiplatelet of choice in the long term. We still don't know, because it's still relatively new, whether anticoagulants would be better, but in its current form, and until we get guidance from the FDA and my colleagues around the country, that aspirin and Plavix for 6 months, and once Plavix is taken off at 6 months, and then aspirin indefinitely, that's the current practice.
So in the last few minutes, Dr. Sass, how can a community physician refer a patient to UAB Medicine and get involved in your trials?
Yeah, I mean, in the other trial that we're going is Partner 3, which is the Sapien 3 valve, and comparing open surgery in low-risk patients, STS less than 4. So this is a groundbreaking trial, because this will basically upset the apple cart of surgery. If this is shown to be beneficial compared to open surgery, aortic valve replacement as we know it may be changed, because if low-risk patients do well with this, then surgery for aortic valve disease will go down considerably, and that we're currently enrolling in Partner 3. So the two trials, Portico, which is high risk with a new self-expanding valve, and then the Partner 3, which is doing it in low-risk patients, We have a multidisciplinary valve clinic, and we can see that on the UAB medicine website. And then there is anybody can be referred, especially if they're in-house patients. They can page the interventionalist on call through the UAB page operator, and then the line that gets everybody into UAB is 205-934-MIST, and we call it the MIST line. And that's a great way of getting patients that they have any question from an outside physician or a transfer. We're happy to evaluate these patients if they're sick in the hospital, and we can usually get them, whether if they think they're a high-risk patient or a low-risk patient or any patient for any of our valve interventions, they can get us through the website, valve clinic, the MIST line, or page one of the interventionalist or surgeon on call for that day.
And tell us about your team. Why is UAB so great to work with?
Well, I think that the really great thing is that from a surgical point of view, the person who has kind of spearheaded this program is Dr. Davies, who's one of the busiest surgeons probably in the Southeast, who if he wanted to do people open for aortic valve disease, he could do it because he's an excellent surgeon and can get them very sick patients through very, very high-risk surgery. But the great thing is that he actually believes in the technology. Some surgeons out there are not full adopters of this because it's a new technology. Everyone is always suspicious of the long-term outcomes. But we actually published a paper here that showed that we increased the aortic valve disease volume in our hospital, meaning that we've captured more patients who would have died with this disease and have done more surgeries and subsequently also more transcatheter aortic valve replacements with a total lower mortality than in the past, which is the whole goal of this, is to improve patient care throughout the state of Alabama and the Southeast. So if you can do that and you can still increase your number of surgeries that are open, so you're not like abandoning an old tried and true technology and increasing patient throughput through the institution, meaning that you're capturing more of these patients who wouldn't be treated and doing it with lower complications, you can't get any better than that. And then we have a great cardiac anesthesia team. Our echocardiographer, again, is committed to really, really improving imaging of these valves, so that helps us up front. And our CT radiologist, Dr. Satinder Singh, has just been an incredible asset to the program, and again, a great advocate of TAVR, because our CAT scans are what I think sets us apart, because we can definitely figure out what to do prior to getting into the procedure, because we have such great pre-planning. And then our entire interventional team, Dr. Lisar, Dr. Saraf, and myself, all work together nicely. And again, it's a true multidisciplinary approach with a good group of cardiologists, a surgeon, echocardiographer, CT, and the person that I can't say enough about is our coordinator, Lindsay Jernigan, and our nurse coordinator, Heather Allspa, is that they're incredibly committed to the program and really want to help the patients of this area.
Thank you so much, Dr. Sass, for being with us today. You're listening to UAB Medcast. For more information on resources available at UAB Medicine, you can go to uabmedicine.org/physician. That's uabmedicine.org/physician. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.